Dear podcast listener, before we get to our new episode, just a moment about what we do here at Latino USA and how you can help support us. So in the studio with me is our senior editor, Fernanda Camarena.
Hi, Maria.
So Fernanda, you do bring a lot of pride to the work that you do here at Latino USA.
Yeah, I mean, I've been a fan of the show. I've been your fan for the longest time. I was born and raised in Juarez. I traveled my entire life to study in the U.S. So I remember like listening to Latino USA as I crossed the border every day. And yeah, I mean, I think that it's not only a pleasure being around so much talent, but also there's a great sense of responsibility. And I remember my first week here, you did this story with Jay Johnson. And for me, it has been the most powerful accountability interviews. And, you know, for people out there, Jay Johnson is a former Secretary of Homeland Security under Obama. And, you know, Maria, fearless, relentless with her interview. And that for me was a moment that was filled with inspiration and just a sense of purpose.
So you are always thinking about how our stories are going to connect deeply with our listeners. And what's interesting about our listeners is that they are as diverse as the United States of America. What's it like to work on a show that is very much for the Latino-Latina population, but also it's for everyone else?
Yeah, I mean, I think it makes you think twice in your approach. We come from a place that understands and values the diversity of these narratives. Because we do have a diverse newsroom and we recognize not only, you know, our talent, but also our limitations. And that's what great journalists do. They just push forward and they don't give up. Latino USA has proven to pave the way for a lot of journalists of color and has shown to other news organizations that newsrooms can be diverse, can be inclusive, and can be fearless.
Well, thank you for being fearless as our senior editor of Latino USA, Fernanda Camarena. Thanks again.
Thank you, Maria.
So as we're getting to the end of the year, it's really a good time to think about contributing. And, you know, just think about all the great stories that we brought you in 2019. And so when you make an end of the year gift to your NPR station, you'll be supporting the stations and the stories that matter to you. So support Latino USA. And support your local public radio station by donating today. Visit donate.npr.org/LatinoUSA. And thank you. Gracias. You said when you were a little girl growing up at some point that you thought you were Puerto Rican.
Yes.
And I just kind of...
Yes.
You know, Mexicans are very proud about being Mexican.
Yes.
And Tejanos are very proud about being Tejano.
Yes. My hometown, San Juan, Texas.
Get it.
The name of the town.
So what made you think like San Juan, Puerto Rico, San Juan, Texas, I'm Puerto
Rican? Well, because when you're a kid, you say where you're from, you don't say the state. So I don't say I'm from San Juan, Texas. Like, you know, when I heard San Juan, I knew that it was in Puerto Rico. I only thought there was one San Juan. Then when I left Texas and met Puerto Ricans, like, I was like, oh, yeah, I'm so not Puerto Rican. I have a whole different culture.
Then you're like, respect.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, oh, yeah, no, like, you got it going on a level I can't handle. Like, you got it going on.
From NPR and Futuro Media, it's Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Today, getting personal with comedian and author Cristela Alonso. Back in 2014, the ABC network took a chance on a rookie comedy about a Mexican-American woman searching for her own version of the American dream. It was called Cristela.
And why do you want to be a lawyer?
I just love that in the eyes of the law, everyone is equal, from the lowest working person to the richest titan of industry.
You've been misled.
Cristela, played by comedian Cristela Alonso, is an aspiring lawyer who moves back in with her traditional working class family in order to afford being an unpaid intern at a law office.
Why so fancy?
I told you, Ma, I got the interview for the internship today.
Ah, yes, a job where you work very hard and make no money.
And Cristela Alonso not only starred in the show, she created, wrote, and produced the sitcom, making her the first Latina to do so in a network series. Cristela aired for 22 episodes, with themes and characters crafted from the star's own life experiences. But despite Cristela's authentic touch, after only one season, ABC canceled the show. In a personal blog post in response to the news, Cristela wrote, "Trust me, Cristela the show might be done, but Cristela the person has just started." And so, in 2017, she released a Netflix special titled Lower Classy.
Look, I don't want to brag. But I've got money.
And then she became the first Latina lead voice in a Disney Pixar release. In Cars 3, Cristela voiced the character of Cruz Ramirez. A fierce but funny racing trainer in the shape of a yellow sports coupe. She also began to use her platform to bring light to issues from immigration to affordable health care in low-income communities. And this October, Cristela released her memoir. It's titled Music to My Years, and in it, she shares an intimate glimpse of living below the poverty line in a mixed-status family, and then her eventual rise to stardom. Each chapter of the memoir is titled after a song, which links to a significant moment in Cristela's life.
We don't believe you, because we the people are still here in the radio.
Like We the People by A Tribe Called Quest and Shape of My Heart by the Backstreet Boys. But in my conversation with Cristela, we dive deeper into the stories of growing up in the border town of San Juan, Texas, what liberation meant to her as a child, and how she learned to, in her words, speak in sitcom. Cristela Alonso joins me in the studio now. Cristela, welcome back to Latino USA.
Hi, Latino USA. I feel like a San Marcos blanket has been wrapped around me every time I come into the office.
Well, we love having you, but the last time you were here, you were not an author.
Isn't that crazy?
You wrote a whole book, girl.
I wrote a whole book by myself. When I first pitched the book, people were surprised that I wanted to write it by myself. They thought I wanted a ghostwriter. And it's funny because when I was recording the audiobook about a month ago, somebody said, whoa, you can tell you wrote your book because a lot of people that didn't, they struggle to read the book because they don't know what's in the book.
Oh my God.
And I was like, oh no, like, no, I wrote it. Like, it's so weird.
In fact, you so wrote it. And the thing that I love, okay, we're really going to go back in time because, you know, the cover is a photograph of you. You look fabulous. And you're holding on to what some people in this generation might look and say, what does she have in her hands? What is that contraption that she's holding in her hands? And of course, I looked at it and I was like, oh.
Yes.
Because it's a cassette. A cassette to you was like a lifeline.
Oh, yes. It was my connection. It was my connection to an unknown world. It was a connection to the country that I was born and raised in, yet knew nothing about. I'm Mexican by how I grew up. My mom didn't suddenly become the Stepford wife that was just all about casseroles and everything. Like, we were all trying to find our identity along the way. And the cassettes, music really helped me a lot. My mom and I, we used to go to Mexico on Mondays and we would buy magazines. Like, she would buy TV Novelas. There was another one called Notitas Musicales. And Notitas Musicales was this, it's like a music album, like a music magazine. A lot of it was like American music. And if a song was really big, they would write the lyrics out. And I remember there were some songs, there were some Whitney Houston songs that were in the book. And I thought, oh my God, there's a Whitney Houston song and I'm buying it in Mexico. Like, it was just so, it was so perfect for me. And it was such a special thing because
So many of the relatives I knew, they knew American music because that's how they were learning English.
You know, people who grow up in this country don't realize that if you're Mexican, like the U.S. soundtrack for music is the soundtrack that you're growing up with. If you're in Mexico, you actually, you're always listening to the top 40 song.
Yes.
Oftentimes it will get to you a little bit later.
Yes.
But it is a way in which you understand the United States of America. And you're simply saying, yeah, it was my way of understanding it, even though I was in this country.
Absolutely.
Before I even get to any of the chapters, Cristela, I really love your dedication.
Yeah.
So you dedicated this book to the people who have worked in the fields, picking the food we eat. You continue just like, you know, people who are cleaning houses and working in restaurants, taking care of others, feeling invisible. I want you to know that not only do I see you, but I am a child who comes from someone just like you. You are thanking all of the people who in this country are often not even seen, right? They're invisible. And
yeah.
You're like, not even before you start the book, you're like, yo, this is dedicated to you. Why?
Yeah.
Why?
I think it's very hard to explain the heart of people who want so little and who struggle to get the dignity that any human is worthy of. There are times when I get very emotional and I see people that remind me of my mom. And I see them on a bike coming home from work late at night. I see the adult Latino kid whose little old mom is like being driven around to like a Target. And I feel like a lot of times we thank the community in general. People, they're just like, thank you to the Latino community that da-da-da. And I'm like, I'm very specific about what I wanted to do because those people mean a lot to me. They sacrifice their lives and their hopes and their dreams so that you could have a shot. How can you not thank them?
Early on in the book, you reveal, you talk about poverty. I mean, being poor is really an essential part of your experience of growing up in this country. But I was intrigued about the fact that it wasn't until the year 2000 that this is when you actually reveal, as it were, to your friends, right?
Yes.
In Los Angeles now.
Yes.
Because you basically said, if you come and visit me, if you see where I grew up, you're going to realize how poor I really was.
Yes.
And I want to talk about the shame. In particular, in this country, there is a particular shame around being poor.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering if you can take me back to that time when you realized that you were going to have to kind of share this with your friends and what that emotion brought up for you.
If I can summarize the way I grew up, below the poverty line, needing a lot of things, technically that's how I would describe it. But when people ask me, I always say very happy. It was a very happy childhood. I always felt very loved by my siblings and my mother. My siblings and my mother, they all moved to heaven and earth for me to be here right now. And that group of friends, they're all gay men. And I was learning a lot about myself. A lot of them were also trying to kind of come to terms with who they were and what that meant, because those certain friends all came from small towns. That's one of the reasons we got along. We were all kind of from the middle of nowhere and we found each other in the big city. I learned from them that I could actually own what I was, which gave me courage to accept what I was, because at the same time, in a way, I say courage because I didn't know what I was. I was very ashamed of how I was growing up. Once I started getting into about like second, third grade, because then the kids started telling me that I was really poor. And I wrote about it in the book when my friend gave me a ride home and her mom was dropping me off on my street in fifth grade. And she said, this is where the other side lives. And I didn't know what she meant by that. And then the next day, my friend tells me that her mom, throughout dinner, kept telling her to be so thankful that she wasn't living like me. And that always stayed with me. That's what made me really ashamed.
Which leads me to this particular part that follows soon after that, when you kind of reveal about the shame of poverty. And then it says, you write, throughout my childhood, I realized that what I was shooting for was liberation. And I, you know, this sentence really struck me because I'm like, as a child, thinking about liberation, like that's like deep. And this is for you. Well, why don't you describe what for you as a child, liberation, that's such a heavy term.
Yeah.
And you're saying throughout your childhood, you were looking for liberation.
I was very stifled as a kid because of different factors. I come from an old school family where, you know, women were submissive to men. We grew up in a religious Catholic, you know, background where I was taught to always be modest and humble and cover yourself up and don't really try to show off that you're anything because you're nothing because, you know, this is kind of like the cross to bear. You're like a good person that should try to help out. It was never about confidence. And I never fit any of those things. And I knew it from a young age. I was always considered the weird one at school because I always had so many questions. I was always seen as like the weird one in my family because I had this aspiration that seemed so ridiculous, so luxurious in a way compared to my family. My first dream ever was to be the first female president of the United States. I loved it. I love politics. I love history. I was a straight A student for that reason.
Wait, if you're a straight A student, then you can become the president of the United States?
Isn't that crazy? Isn't that crazy? Cut to right now. You know, I mean, I wanted to have my perfect record. I wanted to be so perfect. I wanted to be I just wanted to prepare myself to be president. And the moment I said that out loud, everyone told me I was dumb. This was fourth grade. And people thought I was dumb for having that dream. Now, how the hell are you supposed to grow up thinking that you matter when they're saying that even a dream of yours isn't good enough for you to have? So for me, liberation meant finding out what was out there and hoping that the rest of the world was different from my little town because that's the only hope I had.
Coming up on Latino USA, my conversation with comedian, writer, and producer Cristela Alonso continues. Stay with us, no te vayas.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Capital One. With the Capital One Walmart Rewards Card, you can earn 5% back at Walmart online, 2% at Walmart in-store, restaurants and travel, and 1% everywhere else. When you want all that, you need the Capital One Walmart Rewards Card. What's in your wallet? Terms and exclusions apply. Capital One N.A.
Support also comes from Sony Music Latin, presenting the Latin Grammy-nominated reggaeton superstar Ozuna and his newest album, Nibiru. With over 30 million monthly Spotify listeners and 13 billion YouTube views, this highly anticipated third studio album follows a string of collaborations with Cardi B, Rosalia, Nicki Jam, J Balvin, Akon, and many more. Make sure to listen to Nibiru, available now.
What were the best albums, songs, and memorable moments from 2019? I'm Robin Hilton. Join NPR Music all this month as we look back at the past year. From Lil Nas X and Billie Eilish to Lizzo and Leonard Cohen. Listen on All Songs Considered from NPR with new episodes each week.
Hey, we're back. And when we left off, comedian and author Cristela Alonso was sharing intimate moments of her life and her childhood. Now we're going to shift to talk about the music that she brings up in her memoir. Somebody who was really important in your life, who was not your family, was Selena. In other chapters, you know, there's a headline of a song.
Yes.
But Selena gets an entire chapter.
Yes.
It's all about Selena.
Yes.
What did Selena mean to you?
She was a beacon of hope that hopefully she would be one of the people that was able to show everyone that we were important. That's why people don't understand that even decades after her death, we still celebrate her. And we wonder about that what if. Because for a moment, for the moment she was around, we felt like we were seen in a way that had never happened before and has never happened since. I mean, there's been different people that do it in different ways, but not the way she did it. And for me, it just seems so familiar. She was the person that reminded me of the specialness of where I come from. This beautiful girl who was just like the girl next door. She made me feel like I had the chance of being someone. And that's really all I've ever wanted, is a chance to be seen as someone.
Late at night when all the world is sleeping.
Latinos and Latinas, I don't know what it is, but, you know, we overconsume in terms of media.
Yes.
I mean, we overconsume probably in Mexico because we're watching the telenovelas and listening to the radio all the time. Mm-hmm. We overconsume here in the United States, I think, because we're trying to understand the country that we're being raised in. Because yeah. I was actually born in Mexico, right? Mm-hmm. So it was always like, wait, what? Teach me.
Right.
There's something that you write, which is this particular fascination that develops when you get access to cable television.
Yes.
The thing is that what you were watching was like the Golden Girls.
Thank you for being a friend.
The Price is Right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Television's most exciting hour of fantastic prizes. The fabulous 60-minute Price is Right.
The point is that this is a way in which you and I and so many others just like us are really trying to make sense of the United States of America. How do you understand the fact that we overconsume media?
I consumed a lot of media because my mom never let me interact with kids. I didn't grow up in a great neighborhood. We were already like the poor of the poor. And my mom wanted to shield me from a lot of what she thought was negative in my neighborhood. So she would never let me go out. I was never allowed to hang out with friends. After school, I had to be home and I was just home. I was like Rapunzel. I would just get locked away in the house and I would never go. The only connection I had to the outside world was television. I started speaking in sitcom. If I text people, like I have a friend that texts, that we text every now and then, and he'll remind me that I write jokes like a sitcom, because that's how I learned. You
know, that's so crazy.
Yeah, so it's this weird thing where people always said, you were really good on your sitcom. I'm like, that's because I know how to do that. Like I became a sitcom.
When you say that you think in sitcom or you talk in sitcom, can you give me an example?
Sure. A lot of the jokes that I can say in conversation, I always tend to do it with people that are not Latino. Subconsciously, I realized that a lot of the sitcoms I saw were with white families.
Mm.
So I think that was my way of communicating. My jokes sound like a joke you would say in an episode of TV. And it's because I learned how to talk like that. So if you're a guy friend of mine and you say, you know, my wife's happy with me, I'm like, that's not what she said. You know what I mean? And it's like, and I say it with that cadence because I'm so used to saying it, you know? But it also makes it hard because in the past, I've watched so much TV that I've been in writer's rooms where people pitch something and I'm the joy kill. I'm like, oh, we can't do that. There was an episode of Family Matters where they did that. It was like when Urkel was, like, I'm the person that kills everything. You know,
because it's been done.
Yeah, you know, like if I know it, I'll say it. And I'm like, well, we can do better. Like that was already done. You know what I mean?
Fast forward, you leave Texas. Your mother passes away. you end up doing stand-up comedy, but towards the end of the book. A part that was really surprising to me, Cristela, because I don't know if I knew this. I don't know if we had talked about it. But you go into depth about this moment when your show has been canceled. Basically, what happens is that you're given this extraordinary offer to do another sitcom.
It's One Day at a Time.
And it's One Day at a Time.
Yeah.
And you turn it down.
Yeah. I said no to One Day at a Time because I thought that it was too similar to Cristela. And I didn't want people thinking that that was all I could do. Because then, what if that show went away? So then I have Cristela and I would have this version of One Day at a Time that's different but similar. Was I ever going to be allowed to tell another story if the first two projects that they saw me in were very complimentary towards each other?
There's something else that you turned down right away.
It was The View and
Exactly. And your agents are basically saying, hey, Cristela, what's going on here?
Yeah.
And the thing that stood out for me was the fact that throughout all of this, you were saying, no, but that's not me. Where did you get that pair of ovaries? And maybe it actually goes 100% back to your mom, right? And in many ways, when you grow up with nothing.
Oh, yeah. It makes you fearless because the worst that can happen at the end of the day is you go back to being poor. I come from that. I'm very proud to be from that. I didn't want to do The View because I was not ready to become a daytime host. My show was canceled and they called me like 10, 15 minutes later to offer me The View. So I went from getting a canceled show to getting the offer of The View, like pretty immediate. I didn't want to do it because I just didn't. That's not the kind of show I wanted to do. I like doing the hot topics. I like hanging out with the women and stuff. I didn't want to do the segments about fall fashion, the, you know, like how to, you know, work out for less or, you know, it wasn't me at that moment. I didn't want to do it. And I always say that if you do it for money, people will always feel that you did it for money. And I couldn't do that. I couldn't do that.
Opposite of that is your encounter with Dolores Huerta.
Yes.
Who becomes a really central part of your life.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, a lot of people know Dolores Huerta.
Yeah.
We engage with her. But for you, your encounter with Dolores Huerta actually cemented something else in your life. Why is she so important? And why has she been such an influence that it's kind of like a game changer for you?
You know, I have never been asked that.
That's why you hang out with me. I mean, there is this beautiful picture of you and Dolores, right?
Right after the Trump, the 2016 election.
You call her dear friend and mentor.
Yes, she is.
That's, you know, and that chapter is We the People from A Tribe Called Quest.
Yes.
So it's clear that it is a highly political chapter.
Yes.
You could just be talking politics, but for you, it's not just about talking politics.
I knew who Dolores Huerta was because they didn't teach her in school, but I liked learning and I decided to read up on her and Cesar Chavez when I was younger because I was so fascinated by the farm workers movement. I was doing a show in Bakersfield. I want to say right after the show got canceled, I'm not sure. And she came to my show. And after that, we just started talking. And I got to tell you, I am so grateful for everything I've gotten and where I come from that I wanted to thank them, everyone that had a piece in it somehow. And through Dolores, I realized she is so active. She drops these nuggets of knowledge with me every time that we hang out. And she leaves me so shaken at times because she makes me think. And there was a moment where she got very serious and she asked me, when something happens to me, I want you to make sure that the work continues. Now, for all I know, she's telling everybody this, but when she told me that, I said yes. and I meant it. And my life changed. And it really became more about helping than anything else.
Which leads me to my final question. Because the thing about you, Cristela, and it really comes through in your book, Music to My Ears, but the whole way in which you kind of manage your life, your public self, the way you interact with people, you know, you even write about how you feel like you cannot even do justice to telling the immigrant story. Even though you were poor, you always say there were people who had less.
Mm-hmm.
So final words on why, Cristela, you are so committed to this very real sense of being humble. And, you know, as Mexicans, we are taught that.
Yeah.
And it's a wonderful thing.
Yes.
It can also be really destructive.
Yeah.
In your case, I feel like it is one of your superpowers.
Well, thank you. It actually feels weird hearing that because I'm humble. The irony in that question is insane. I don't know if I'm humble, but I will say that everything I do, I try to be as honest as I can. And I think actually it goes back to maybe the inscription of the book. It's not about being humble. It's about acknowledging everyone around me and making them feel like they're worthy of respect because they are.
Your mom did well. ¿Cómo se llamaba tu mamá?
Natalia.
Natalia.
Natalia Alonso González.
You did well, Natalia. Presente. Congratulations on your first book, Cristela.
Thank you, Maria.
Cristela Alonso is a comedian, actor, and producer based in Los Angeles. Her memoir is titled Music to My Years, and she just finished wrapping up her comedy tour. It's called My Affordable Care Act. This episode was produced by Janice Yamoka, with additional help from Miguel Macias and Maya Cueva. It was edited by Fernanda Camarena. The Latino USA team includes Sofia Paliza Carr, Antonia Cerejido, Maggie Freely, and Alisa Escarce, with help from Ginny Montalvo and Joanne De Luna. Special thanks to Raul Perez. Our engineers are Stephanie Lebeau and Julia Caruso. Our production manager is Natalia Fidelholtz. Our digital team includes Julio Ricardo Varela and Amanda Alcántara. Our interns are Adriana Tapia and Juan Diego Ramirez. Our theme music was composed by Zenia Rubinos. If you like the music you heard on this episode, be sure to stop by latinousa.org and check out our weekly Spotify playlist. I'm your host and executive producer, Maria Hinojosa. Join us again on our next episode. And in the meantime, look for us on all of your social media. Ciao.
Latino USA is made possible in part by the Heising Simons Foundation, unlocking knowledge, opportunity, and possibilities. More at hsfoundation.org. The John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation. And the Ford Foundation, working with visionaries on the front lines of social change worldwide.
It's a cassette. And people are like, what's a cassette? It's like tape. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Next time on Latino USA. When you think about music from Latin America, a lot of genres come to mind. Rancheras, tangos, bachata, reggaeton. But metal? Well, you'd be surprised.
That music was like perfect for a third world pissed off kid. It was like the best.
That's next time on Latino USA.